Hi folks, this is the 10th episode of the podcast, and I feel it's a good time to take a minute and just thank you all for your continuing support over the past few months. The podcast has received an excellent reception, and I've got plenty of great compliments as well as useful feedback on how to continue improving the series. If you want to help the podcast, you can always donate the price of a coffee or pint at patreon.com/thetroublespodcast. Alternatively, please make sure to leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Before I get into the episode, I also want to mention two other podcasts that you might find interesting. If you want a podcast to learn more about Irish history, which is significantly more lighthearted, then please check out Shite Talk, an Irish history podcast. It's an entertaining, informative podcast with some excellent stories to tell. The hosts, comedians Jason and Kevin, are a lot of fun and have a great dynamic together. If you are a fan of true crime, then I'd also recommend checking out Which Murderer. It's a true crime podcast, and Holly and Gemma are excellent hosts who discuss some fascinating murders which have occurred around the world. The format is a bit different, as each episode they pick a theme instead of a specific murder, so small town murders or deathbed murder confessions, and many more. Definitely one to check out. Now, back to the show. Though the IRA attacked places in Northern Ireland and the United Kingdom, they sometimes ventured further, and their plan to bomb the British overseas territory of Gibraltar is one such example. What happened in Gibraltar, and the chain of killings that followed in Northern Ireland, is one of the most shocking examples of the tit-for-tat violence that encapsulated the darkest days of the Troubles in Northern Ireland. This is the Troubles Podcast, a podcast which explores the violence and bloodshed that occurred in Northern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, and Great Britain, as multiple sides and organisations waged a conflict over the status of Northern Ireland. Gibraltar is a British overseas territory, located at the tip of the Iberian Peninsula. It's an incredibly small piece of land, having an area of 6.2 square kilometres. Though it is tiny, it is in a very important geographical location, separating both Europe from Africa and the Mediterranean Sea from the Atlantic Ocean. It also shares a border with Spain. In 1713, after the Treaty of Utrecht, control of Gibraltar was ceded to Britain, and the area has been of strategic importance to Britain ever since, especially during the Napoleonic Wars and World War II. During World War II, civilians were evacuated from Gibraltar, and the entire peninsula was used as a military base. Nowadays, Gibraltar has a population of about 30,000 people, and there have been two different referendums on the issue of sovereignty and whether Spain should govern part of Gibraltar, and both times the locals have overwhelmingly voted no, wanting to remain a British overseas territory. It was 1987 in Northern Ireland, and the Provisional IRA had already expanded their campaign into different countries. Just 3 years earlier, they had come close to killing British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher in the Brighton Hotel bombing. It was important for the IRA to take their attacks out of Northern Ireland, as they hoped to make international headlines and have their cause heard around the world. Because of Gibraltar's history, and the fact that it is a colony of the British Crown, a decision was made by the IRA Council to stage an attack there. Three individuals were selected to carry out the attack: Daniel McCann, Sean Savage, and Mairead Farrell. All three were senior members of the IRA. Sean Savage was an expert in explosives, and Daniel McCann was an expert in intelligence. Mairead Farrell had previously served 10 years in prison after she was caught while planting a bomb in 1976. She was interned in Armagh Women's Prison and took part in the subsequent dirty protest and hunger protests that were happening as the internees demanded to be treated as prisoners of war and not regular prisoners. Farrell was released in 1986 and soon re-engaged in IRA activity. Then, in 1988, she became part of the plan to attack Gibraltar. The intention was to attack the band and guard of the 1st Battalion of the Royal Anglican Regiment, who had a changing of the guard ceremony and parade, which would take place every Tuesday morning outside the residence of the Governor of Gibraltar. The parade was a huge tourist attraction, and many people would gather to watch them perform in front of the Governor. The band would play, and the soldiers would march. The parade would then end around the corner down a side street. It was on this side street that the IRA intended to plant a car bomb. The IRA believed that they were operating covertly, but they were wrong. From late 1987, the British authorities were aware that the IRA were planning an attack in Gibraltar. A known IRA member had been sighted at the changing of the guard ceremony, raising suspicions. To prove that an attack was being planned, the governor of Gibraltar cancelled the ceremony in December that year, under the pretense that they needed to repaint the guardhouse, whereas secretly they were preparing for a possible attack. The ceremony was then resumed on Tuesday, February 23rd, and a female IRA member was spotted again studying the parade in detail. She was then spotted the following Tuesday again on March 1st, and an imminent attack was suspected. Authorities in England began working with Spain and Gibraltar, who were warned to be on the lookout for members arriving into Spanish airports. The only way to get to Gibraltar was to fly into Spanish airports and then drive down. On the 2nd of March, Farrell, McCann and Savage began to covertly make their way toward Gibraltar. Savage made his way down to Dublin, then flew to Brussels and on to Barcelona, where he managed to slip into Spain undetected, even though Spanish authorities were looking out for him. He then flew down to Malaga, which was only 90 minutes away from their target, Gibraltar. McCann was stopped by British soldiers at a routine checkpoint on his way to Dublin, but he was let continue on his journey to Spain. Then, on Friday, March 4th, Savage rented a red Ford Fiesta, which was the first of the team's three cars that they would rent. Spanish police believed that this car drove over 1,000 miles to collect the explosives which would be used in the attack, which had been smuggled into Spain. On Friday evening, McCann reached Malaga. He had no idea that he'd been under surveillance the entire way from Ireland to Spain, and he may have been the one to lead authorities to Savage, who had evaded detection up until this point. Then on Saturday, March 5th, Spanish police received an urgent message from London, alerting them that there was a third individual, Mairead Farrell, and that they should be on the lookout for her as well. Farrell arrived into Spain undetected, and the following day, on Sunday, March 6th, Farrell rented a white Ford Fiesta under the pseudonym Catherine Smith. She drove it into an underground car park in Marbella and parked it beside their other rental car, and it is believed that the explosives were then transferred into her car. 140 pounds of explosives were later found in the car. At 12:45 in the afternoon on the same day, Sean Savage made his way undetected into Gibraltar in a white Renault 5, which he parked on the side street that they intended to bomb, before walking around the town. McCann and Farrell then entered Gibraltar on foot over 2 hours later. They met up with Savage and the trio began to walk through the town at 3:30. They were completely unaware that both cars had been tailed by Spanish police. Each car was tailed by four unmarked police cars that would constantly interchange with each other so as to avoid detection. They were also communicating the movement of the cars to British officials in Gibraltar. A branch of the British Special Air Forces, or SAS, had been dispatched to Gibraltar to intercept the attackers, and when they crossed into Gibraltar, the Spanish police handed over surveillance to the British authorities. Maurice Punch writes in his book, Shoot to Kill, Police Accountability, Firearms and Fatal Force, that the British forces had prepared for this mission by practicing arrest techniques, while the Gibraltar authorities searched for a suitable place to house the three IRA members when the arrests occurred. But there would be no arrests on this day. There was confusion surrounding the white Renault, as it had been allowed into Gibraltar, but there was also suspicion that it already contained the bomb. There was also another theory that the explosives were already in Gibraltar and that the car was en route to collect them. British Foreign Secretary Geoffrey Howe later said of the car, "Their presence and actions near the parked Renault car gave rise to strong suspicion that it contained a bomb, which appeared to be corroborated by rapid technical examination of the car." Once the Renault had been left parked, a British soldier who specialised in bomb disposal inspected the Renault and concluded that it should be treated as a suspect bomb car, even though the car was light and not heavily weighed down over the back wheels, which was common when there was a heavy bomb in the vehicle. As it turned out, there was no bomb in this car. It is believed that the IRA's plan was that the three would leave Gibraltar on foot and collect the bomb car, which was in a car park in Marbella, just 1 hour away. They would then switch out the cars, So the white Renault, which was parked at their target location, would then be swapped with the red Ford Fiesta, which contained the bomb. The car would then be left there until 2 days later on Tuesday, when it was due to explode. It is at this point that the exact nature of what happened is not quite clear. Farrell and McCann were walking about 100 metres in front of Savage. A number of British soldiers had been following the three of them as they made their way towards the Spanish border, when the order was given to intercept and arrest the three. The undercover soldiers then moved in to arrest them. At the exact same time, the Gibraltarian authorities had been informed and told to prepare a vehicle to put the arrested people into. A police vehicle driving towards the scene was stuck in traffic, so decided to activate their siren to try and clear it out. The sound of the siren startled McCann and Farrell, just as Soldier A and Soldier B confronted them. The soldiers' names have never been publicly released, so they are referred to with letters. At the inquest, Soldier A stated that he raised his pistol intending to shout a challenge at them, but McCann's hand moved aggressively across the front of his body. Soldier A then shot McCann once in the back. He then looked at Farrell and believed that she was reaching into her handbag. Suspecting that she had a remote detonator for the bomb, he shot her in the back as well. He then shot McCann a further 3 times. Soldier B also shot McCann and Farrell a number of times. Soldiers C and D were following Savage, who had started to run away from the shooting, and Soldier C testified that Savage turned around while reaching towards his jacket pocket. Suspecting a remote detonator, Soldiers C and D opened fire on Savage. All three members of the IRA were killed in a volley of bullets that lasted less than a minute, and 27 rounds of ammunition were used. Immediately after the shooting, the forces donned their berets and identified themselves, and at 4:04, they handed control back to the Gibraltar police force. One passerby was injured in the shooting after being grazed by a bullet. Upon inspecting the white Ford Fiesta, there was no traces of explosives found. Keys found on the body of Mairead Farrell led authorities to a second car, which was an hour away in a car park in Marbella, Spain. There, the police found a car which was loaded with 140 pounds of Semtex explosives, rounds of ammunition, 4 detonators and 2 timers. Republicans back in Northern Ireland were outraged that the three had been shot while unarmed. 2 days after the shooting, the British Foreign Secretary made this statement. Shortly before 1 p.m. yesterday afternoon, Savage brought a white Renault car into Gibraltar and was seen to park it in the area where the guard mounting ceremony assembles. Before leaving the car, he was seen to spend some time making adjustments in the vehicle. An hour and a half later, McCann and Farrell were seen to enter Gibraltar on foot and shortly before 3 p.m. joined Savage in the town. Their presence and actions near the parked Renault car gave rise to strong suspicions that it contained a bomb, which appeared to be corroborated by a rapid technical examination of the car. Around 3:30 p.m., all three left the scene and started to walk back towards the border. On their way to the border, they were challenged by the security forces. When challenged, they made movements which led the military personnel, operating in support of the Gibraltar police, to conclude that their own lives and the lives of others were under threat. In light of this response, they, the IRA members, were shot. Those killed were subsequently found not to have been carrying arms. The parked Renault car was subsequently dealt with by a military bomb disposal team. It has now been established that it did not contain an explosive device. For the most part, the British media vindicated the killings, saying that the actions of the SAS had prevented a greater loss of life. But one documentary would be released which raised some very controversial questions. A Thames television documentary called Death on the Rock was released in April of 1988, just 2 months after the shootings, which raised some points that were seen as very controversial at the time in the United Kingdom. The documentary reconstructed events leading up to the shootings and spoke to a number of new eyewitnesses at the scene. The 4 witnesses said that the soldiers opened fire without warning. None of them saw the bombers make any threatening movements. One witness said that Farrell and McCann had their hands in the air when they were shot. Another witness said that the soldier who shot Savage did not issue a warning or identify himself before opening fire. There was also an account from a witness of the soldier who shot Savage. Quote, The man on the ground was lying on his back. The man standing over this man had his foot on the man's chest. I could see that he also had a gun in his hand. I then saw the gunman point his gun deliberately at the man who was lying on the floor and fire two or three times into him at point-blank range. I was horrified by what I saw. In Northern Ireland, the British Army operated what was known as yellow card rules when it came to using lethal force. The rules state that a soldier may only fire at a person who is likely to endanger life and there is no other way to prevent the danger. Death on the Rock questioned whether extreme force was necessary in this case. The viability of the remote detonators was also questioned. Because the three were over a mile away from the car at the time of the shooting, and there would be too much interference to remotely detonate a bomb. An inquest was held on the 6th of September 1988. The three parties involved were the British government, a representative for the SAS team, and a representative for the families of McCann, Savage and Farrell. The inquest heard from 79 witnesses, some of which had appeared on the documentary Death on the Rock. During this inquest, some witnesses retracted statements made on the documentary or were unsure of their recollection of the events. The inquest concluded on the 30th of September and the jury returned a verdict by vote of 9-2 that the killing was lawful and that there was no sign of a conspiracy to murder IRA operatives. In 1995, families of the three killed took the case to the European High Court of Human Rights on the basis that Article 2 of the European Convention on Human Rights had been breached. Article 2 states that everyone's right to life shall be protected by law. The court concluded that Article 2 had been breached for three reasons. For one, the three were not arrested immediately at the border checkpoint from Spain into Gibraltar, though they had been identified. Secondly, authorities did not consider the correctness of the intelligence that they had. The soldiers who shot the three were told that there was definitely a bomb in the car. Thirdly, the use of SAS soldiers was questioned, who were a combat team trained to shoot to kill. The court rejected the family's claim for damages because the three suspects had been killed while preparing for an act of terrorism. That's the end of the legal side of this case, but it's not the end of the story. The chain of events and killings that kicked off as a result of the shootings in Gibraltar really depicted the turmoil, terror, and pandemonium of the Troubles. The bodies of McCann, Savage, and Farrell were flown back to Dublin on the 14th of March, 8 days after the shootings. It has been revealed that Irish Taoiseach at the time, Charles Haughey, requested that the bodies be flown directly to Belfast, avoiding the Republic of Ireland completely, but this request was refused. 2,000 supporters met the coffins in Dublin Airport, which were then driven up to Northern Ireland. At the border, the procession was met with a large number of police and army vehicles. There was a palpable tension in the air as mourners jostled with police and army. The bodies were then brought to repose in their individual homes. 2 days later, on the 16th of March, the funeral of the three took place. They were to be buried in the Milltown Graveyard, which is a graveyard that has been synonymous with Irish republicanism. Out of respect for the dead, the RUC agreed to maintain a minimal presence on the proviso that there would be no salute by masked gunmen. This information about the minimal presence was leaked to a self-described freelance loyalist paramilitary, Michael Stone. Stone was a member of different loyalist groups, including the UDA and the Red Hand Commandos. He committed his first murder of a Catholic civilian, Patrick Brady, in 1984. He then killed another civilian, Kevin McPullen, in 1985. Stone wanted to attack the high-level command of the IRA, Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness, who were both present at the funeral. He walked into the graveyard, pretending to be a mourner. The first two coffins were lowered into the ground, and as the third coffin was lowered, Stone threw two grenades towards the crowd. The moment of the explosion was caught on camera. The ensuing explosion caused absolute terror. Mourners ran in all directions, and a number of people ran directly towards Stone in effort to confront him. Stone threw another grenade, and then took out a pistol and began shooting at the people pursuing him. He eventually ran out of ammunition, and the crowd caught up with him and attacked him. He was bundled into a hijacked car, and there is no doubt that he would have been driven away to his death, but armed RUC officers arrived at the scene and arrested him. Stone killed three people in this attack: Thomas McErlin, John Murray, and Kevin Brady. A further 60 people were injured by bullets, grenade shrapnel, and marble and stone from the gravestones. As he was being pat down by the army, he said of his gun, "The fucking thing's jammed, or else I would have got more of the bastards." The UDA and UVF were quick to deny any involvement in the attack, saying that Stone was a rogue loyalist. Sinn Féin claimed that there must have been collusion, because very few people knew about the reduced police presence at the funeral. Stone was convicted and sentenced to 638 years in prison. He ended up serving 12 years in Mays Prison before being released in 2000 as part of the Northern Ireland peace process. He was then rearrested in 2006 after trying to enter the Parliament buildings in Stormont, Northern Ireland, with a knife, gun, and viable bomb. His lawyer argued that he was taking part in performance art, imitating a terrorist attack. This defence didn't hold up, and Stone was sentenced to 16 years in prison. Then, in 2013, he was given an additional 18 years in prison for his role in the Milltown attacks. Stone has since become a loyalist icon, and there were murals dedicated to him in loyalist areas of Belfast. At this stage, we have the death of three IRA members in Gibraltar. Then at their funeral, an additional three people were to die. One of those three was IRA member Kevin Brady. And at his funeral, the cycle of death would continue. On the 19th of March, the funeral for Kevin Brady was taking place. For many, this was their second funeral in less than a week, and many felt like they were living in a war zone. Again, the RUC agreed that they would keep minimal distance during the funeral. Many mourners were still scared that there was another attack coming. The mourners were following the same route from the church to the graveyard that they had walked 3 days earlier. The funeral cortege was making its way along a street when a car approached them at high speed, after ignoring the traffic stewards who were waving and trying to get it to slow down. The people in the crowd believed that they were under attack again, and a group of people surged towards the car, trying to get to the men inside. One of the men inside drew a pistol and fired a warning shot into the air, which caused the crowd to burst back before they surged in again. The two men were dragged out of the car and taken into the nearby Casement Park. There, they were stripped, beaten, and searched, before being put in a black taxi and driven away. Upon searching the men, it was revealed that they were undercover British soldiers. One had an ID that said Hereford on it, which was a town in Germany where there was a British base. The IRA believed that this was a different place, Hereford in England, where the SAS had their headquarters, as the spellings are very similar. They believed that they had captured members of the same unit who had killed the Gibraltar 3 less than 2 weeks previous. The men were driven to a different location before being shot multiple times by men in balaclavas. A haunting picture was captured of priest Father Alec Reed giving the last rites to the body of one of the soldiers. The men were identified as David Howes and Derek Woods, who were corporals in the British Army. An ex-IRA member described the attack. "I thought it was grotesque, if I'm to be honest with myself. It wasn't a properly conducted IRA operation. It's just not how the IRA would do it. It was just like a mob." British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher went on to describe the incident as the single most horrifying event in Northern Ireland during her time as Prime Minister. Journalist Mary Holland described seeing one of the men as he was dragged by her and the group of journalists she was with. Quote, "He didn't cry out, just looked at us with terrified eyes, as though we were all enemies in a foreign country, who wouldn't have understood what language he was speaking if he called out for help." The entire incident was filmed on camera and from a police helicopter, and the footage would go on to become some of the most shocking and harrowing footage of the entire Troubles. It was never fully clear what the two corporals were doing when they drove into the procession. They were probably driving from one army barracks to another one, but it's unclear why they drove through a nationalist area, and according to the British Army, they had ignored general orders to stay away from the area. They also should have been warned of the funeral procession before leaving the barracks. On one side, people believe it was simply a case of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. On the other, some have argued that they were working undercover. After a lengthy court case, eventually two men, Alex Murphy and Harry Maguire, were arrested and sentenced for the killing of the corporals. Both were released in 1998 under the terms of the Good Friday Agreement. 1988 was a very violent year of the Troubles. In the space of 13 days in March, 8 lives were lost in 3 different attacks that were both violent and savage in their nature. There would be many more killed before the year was over, and it would still be another decade before a tentative peace would be found.